Launch. Introduction. Congrats, you've built something. Now for the most important step, launching it to your future users. What is a launch? Many people have talked about it, some have tried, yet few have succeeded. It's the launch of your app. After getting your idea and putting all your effort into building it, this is the day. You show your product to the world in the hope of getting people to use it and pay for it. But most people are overconfident. They think it's easy. It is relatively easy if you have a great product. But even then, a wrong launch can mean failure on day one. That's why the launch is probably one of the most important parts of doing a startup. In effect, what it means is getting your app in the hands of people so they start using it. And there are lots of ways to go about it. You can get people to know about your app through existing platforms like Product Hunt, Hacker News, or Reddit. You can do outreach to press, so they'll write about it. You can try to get people with a big audience to use it. There are many ways, and we'll discuss most of them in this chapter. Why even launch? The idea of having a first launch is to make a big splash, get lots of people to use your app, learn from their usage, fixing bugs, developing new features, and hopefully getting them engaged so they stick around. You want to bring lots of people in quickly so that the app becomes active and so people start talking about it. It's also a great press opportunity. A launch itself means you can get press from it, even if it just means making your app publicly accessible by deploying it. If you don't launch it, nobody's going to show up and use it. Launches can and mostly are arbitrary these days. With continuous development, you kind of launch every few hours, right? But you need to pick a certain day and time to make this into an event. Let's say you have lots of new updates and you feel like now it's almost like a new product. Then you can launch it and tell the world. How fast should you launch? In most cases, you should launch as fast as possible because you want to have people using it. Why? Because then you can figure out if they use it, how they're using it, and if they don't, why not? You can find bugs you haven't found yourself, and you can get direct feedback from users to improve it. Preparing your app for a launch. One of the most important things to do before launching is seeing if what you made is actually launch ready. Many people have the wrong idea about the term minimum viable product, or MVP. You can't just throw something together and call it an MVP and put it up. It needs to actually work. An email signup box is not a product, it's an email signup box. Don't launch it. That's ridiculous. I see it too much and it's completely useless. So make sure it has a function. It does something well. Fix most bugs. Then make sure that most bugs are gone. Go through the flow of what a new user will go through many times. Act like different users. If you send out emails after a user signs up, see if they actually get it. Go through that flow countless times until you're sure it actually works. If you think all bugs are gone, make sure you get a few more people to check it out. It's easy to miss things because you're so deep in your own app's development. Add an email box. One of the smartest things Product Hunt did, and many copied, was to add an email sign up box at the top of their page. They've since changed it, but it was smart as it gave them the ability to re-engage users. So how should it look? Adding just, subscribe to my newsletter sucks. It doesn't show people value. The last thing I want if I go to your site is to subscribe to another newsletter. Instead, give me something useful and customized. For example, if you have a jobs board and I'm browsing the PHP jobs, that's actually useful to me. Instead of thinking about how useful getting their email address is to you, think about what would be useful to a new user so that you can capture their email address. What if you have a food delivery service? Now that's a startup idea nobody's done yet. Sarcasm. You can set up a free MailChimp account and start capturing addresses with their standard form. You can also add custom fields, like their city, so that you can email them later depending on their city. That's called segmenting. Doing this is important, as it gives you the ability to capture the audience that comes to your site on the day of your launch, and then get some of them to come back in a few weeks. This is so critical, because most sites see a giant drop of traffic after their launch ends. And that literally means you've now got an app that nobody uses. Add push notifications. This applies just as much to a native app as a web app. With a native app, you have even more options, though. You have push notifications, which, if you don't abuse them, are incredibly valuable. You can literally push yourself to a user's most intimate device, their smartphone, straight onto their home screen. Be extremely modest with push notifications, though. If you overuse them and they're not relevant, people will disable them. To use my earlier example of the PHP Jobs app, if I sign up to be notified about PHP Jobs, then you should send me a notification if there's a particularly good PHP job available, or if there are X amount of PHP jobs available that you can show me grouped together each week. That way you give me something useful and you're not spamming me. Set up analytics. Something so common, but yet so many people forget, is setting up proper analytics. The most easy and common platform is Google Analytics, and it's good enough in most cases. Just embed their code. If your app is native, Google also offers a solution for that. The most basic things that you want to see are how many people are using your app during launch. Google shows you that with their real-time tab. Where they are coming from, refers, and their flow inside your app. A good alternative is Mixpanel, which lets you tie specific events, like when somebody taps a button, to your analytics. That means you can track more specifically what people are doing in your app. The problem is Mixpanel is crazy expensive. A cheaper solution is Amplitude, which does exactly the same and in most cases is free. All three of these work with native apps too. Another cool analytics app is called Hotjar, https.hotjar.com. The ethics of this app might be questionable as it lets you stream exactly what your users see. Especially in the early stages of your app, this is incredibly useful. You'll see exactly what people do when they leave your page, and sometimes even when they're confused and are randomly scrolling around your site. But feedback box. This is super important, and I rarely see people implement them. Set up a little feedback pop-up in the bottom left or bottom right of your app. Especially when your app is very new, it's like a superpower to your app's development to get direct user feedback. There's many sites offering this. I used to use a free version of Olark, but their interface is getting extremely old. But the concept remains good. A better option, but not free, is Intercom, which is quickly becoming the default for interaction with users on websites. They offer many products, but one of them adds a little chat box on the bottom right of your app, where you can chat with users directly. And if you're not there, people can leave a message. I don't suggest being on call at all. I'd suggest using it just so users can leave a message. The messages you'll get vary. I get a lot of very fun ones. Mostly it's people thanking for making a website and that I should add a new feature. Because they enter their email address, I am usually able to reply quickly. And many of these feedback messages turn into entire email threads full of feature discussions with random people from the internet. It's pretty amazing. It's also very useful if you break something. I accidentally break my sites a lot, and many times the moment after I deploy the new version with a bug, I'll get a message within 10 minutes through my feedback box that I broke something. I wouldn't even know what to do if I didn't have that. It's become essential to my workflow. Even with startups I have running for years already, things break and you can't always test for them, so let your users be your 24/7 continuous testing army. Where to launch? Typical places to launch a startup.
Hey.
Traditionally, startups have launched in the tech subculture first. That works because tech people are early adopters and open to use new apps. They also care less about bugs than mainstream people will. Platforms like Product Hunt, Hacker News, and even Reddit are geeky but reach a huge mass of people. They're the most obvious places to launch new startups, products, and apps. Should you launch there, though? Many people say you should launch where your customers are. And that's a great point. If you make a food delivery service for pets, are your customers really on Hacker News, or Product Hunt, or Reddit? I guess they could be on all of those. But it'd be probably smart to find a place where pet owners hang out. That could mean advertising on Facebook targeting pet owners, or reaching out to online forums for pets. I have no idea. The point is, in that case, you should target your audience specifically. So, there's a big argument to be made to not launch in the tech subculture. But then more recently, this is changing though. Now that the whole world is starting to get smartphones, It seems tech has become mainstream. Everybody is obsessed with apps and startups. And in that sense, those startup platforms are actually a great place to launch. It really depends how you look at it. Launching on Product Hunt. Product Hunt was founded in 2014 by Ryan Hoover as an email newsletter and has since become one of the most important platforms to launch a startup. Product Hunt is a daily leaderboard, kind of like Reddit, where people can submit and upvote new startups. In 2014, Product Hunt single-handedly instigated an entirely new cultural wave of indie makers, a wave of which I'm thankfully a part of. By letting anyone submit their app, it lets indie makers compete with giant VC-backed startups for attention. It has a community of people that are startup fans, app makers, and mostly just people curious to see the next big thing. There's a lot of early adopters that are literally on the site to discover and try new apps. In general, being on top of Product Hunt will get you around 10,000 people visiting your site, with around 300 simultaneous users, with a percentage of those signing up. Product Hunt traffic may convert less to paid users than normal traffic that arrives on your site by search. That's logical, because those users have a set goal. Instead, Product Hunt users are curious and mostly just visit to take a peek. Product Hunt's comments on products are generally very supportive and positive, but they're not radically honest and painful, like Hacker News. You have to take them with a grain of salt. The most important selling point of Product Hunt for me is that it's packed with tech journalists trying to find their next story. Usually what happens, just hours or a few days after a Product Hunt launch, is that you'll see your app show up in articles in the tech press all around the world. That alone is a great thing, and probably gets you another 50,000 people to visit it over the next few weeks, depending on the media outlet. Submitting to Product Hunt. You only have one opportunity to submit to Product Hunt in a long time. You can't just keep submitting, obviously. Therefore, you have to make sure you do things the right way. I've seen too many startups work for months on their product to then absolutely fail at launching on Product Hunt by underestimating how hard it is. The timing of a launch on Product Hunt is quite important. Product Hunt's time zone is San Francisco, PST time zone, and its ranking resets at midnight. That means you will need to launch at 00:01 or not much later. If you submit at 9 p.m. PST when there's 3 hours left to vote, Product Hunt will take that into account somehow with their vote algorithm, but it still simply puts you at a disadvantage. Most people know by now to launch at midnight PST, so you won't be the only ones up there then. Due to time zones, I've had to stay up or wake up early several times just to submit to Product Hunt at the right time in PST. Set a proper name. If it's the first launch on Product Hunt, just use your app's name. If you already launched, like a year ago, and this is a big new version, use 2.0 or 3.0, etc. Be sure to inform Product Hunt's community managers about this, because sometimes they don't allow you to repost the same product. The tagline is like a motto or slogan. Make sure you put some thought into this. The most common problem with bad taglines is that they're too complex to understand for non-users of your product. What does your app do? It uses machine learning to make your photos better? I see many people. For example, an algorithmic application for machine learning applied to photos may be accurate but is terrible for Product Hunt. Is it the first app to do this? Okay. So what about the first machine learning photo editor? Then add some emojis. The first machine learning photo editor. The thumbnail is as important. Product Hunt allows you to upload animated GIFs. This means you can even convert a video to a GIF as a square box and use that. Be sure it's only a few MB. A good app to capture videos to GIF I use is Jiffy Capture. Make about 8 to 16 high-res screenshots of your app. Zoom in the browser on your website to make sure the screenshots are crisp, they're displayed scaled down on Product Hunt, so it makes sense to zoom in a bit. Show the core functionalities of your app in the screenshots, make it eye-catching. Product Hunt also allows you to add a video now. It's auto-played, with muted audio, when your product page is opened on desktop. This is a great opportunity to make a short thematic promo or explainer video. Make it 30 seconds or shorter because people don't have much time. Capture people's attention quickly and make sure the video gets across what your app is about. When it's up there, I usually send out a tweet on Twitter, share it on Facebook and Instagram, showing people that my new app is on Product Hunt. I explicitly do not ask them to upvote it, but they might do if they like it, and that helps getting up in the ranking. If you have an email list, you can even send a message to them to tell you're on Product Hunt. Again, don't ask people to upvote. They'll do it if they like it anyway. I'll also immediately jump into the Product Hunt comments and write an introduction post about who I am, why I made this app, and what's my future plan with it. I then stick around in the comment section to keep answering any questions people have and see if people have feature suggestions. It's important to be polite and humble when you're in the comments section. I see a lot of people pose, brag, and market themselves when they're up there, and people don't like it. It looks sleazy. You're there to take people in as guests into your app and treat them well and hear their feedback and improve based on that, not to sell. Different platforms have different degrees of hate. Product Hunt is famous as one of the more positive platforms to launch apps on, as it's fiercely curated. That might mean you'll get nicer people but less real feedback than, e.g., Hacker News. Launching on Hacker News. Hacker News is probably the hardcore of the tech and startup scene. Just like Product Hunt, it's a leaderboard, but it doesn't just contain startups. It also has blog posts about new technology, startups, funding rounds, and venture capital. Hacker News is open to anyone's submissions, but that makes it extremely competitive, though. It also has lots of protections against spam, marketing, voting rings, and even controversy. For example, if a post receives more comments than upvotes, it will quickly be flagged, automatically, and disappear from the front page. That's the controversy filter at work. If Hacker News detects you're forwarding your post to your friends to upvote, it'll discount its votes, and it'll just drop it to a few pages further. Therefore, it takes quite some work and luck to get on Hacker News' front page. Where getting on Hacker News is already hard, staying there is a war in itself. Hacker News has aggressive moderating, which means if a mod doesn't like your post, it'll simply discount the upvotes too, and it'll fall off the front page. The whole goal of HN is to keep the content very specifically relevant to its audience and the current zeitgeist. You need to consider that. Many makers make things specifically for the Hacker News zeitgeist. For example, now that I'm writing this, there's a lot of pushback about Facebook's ruining of society and addicting its users to news feeds. Making an app around this that solves this will probably get high on Hacker News if someone else didn't already. As with Product Hunt, the title is very important here. Let's say we're making that food delivery app for pets. We call it Petsy.com. We submit it to HN like this. Petsy.com, the best food delivery for pets. It might work, but I think it probably won't. A better way is to make it personal, like, I made a site that lets you subscribe to food delivery for your pet. It's less marketing-y, and HN people will like it better. An even better option is to use Hacker News's Show and Tell tab called Show HN, like this. Show HN, I made a site that lets you subscribe to pet food delivery. This might have a good chance to stay on top, because it's real, friendly, and authentic. Now that you have submitted it, you need to give it a slight boost. This should be very slight, though, because if you get too many people to upvote it too fast, it will be quickly be flagged as spam. Your submission will be on the new page. It will be on there for about an hour. Getting 5 people spread over the first hour to upvote it will usually already get it to the front page. From there, stay off it and just let the organic reach of being on the front page do its work. Now, if it doesn't go up more, it means Hacker News is probably just not interested in it right now. Luckily, Hacker News recently allows resubmissions. That means you can always try it again in a week, try a different day, or a different time, with a different title, maybe a different landing page. But usually if it doesn't work the first time, it's simply not for Hacker News. Be mindful that Hacker News is notoriously hateful. They can destroy your entire company verbally in the comment section. But they're also one of the most honest places on the internet. They regularly predict the downfall of huge companies years in advance because they see through the PR bullshit, like they did predicting the fall of Groupon. That means they'll see through your bullshit too. And many times they're right. And many times they're wrong too. When Dropbox was posted by Drew Houston for the first time, it wasn't taken seriously by most of HN. It turned out to become a $1 billion company. Generally, Hacker News can get you around 50,000 to 100,000 visitors and 1,000 simultaneous real-time visitors. That's about 5x to 10x as big as Product Hunt, so make sure your server can handle it. Launching on Reddit. Reddit is cool because it's geeky, but it has a big overlap with the mainstream. Reddit is more mainstream. It's also a hive mind. That means if a few people hate it, everyone quickly jumps on and follows. But if some love it, it'll be the best site in the world for a day, according to them. Nomad List was on the first page of Reddit, but was destroyed in the comments, as people doubted the validity of its data. This had to do with a subjective interpretation of what cost of living is, and as it varied so much per person, it wasn't right for anybody. Still, it went to the front page. Hood Maps also got to Reddit's front page, and people were a lot more positive. There was some hate about the socially sensitive nature of the site, but I resolved that by banning any sensitive words from appearing on the site. Most sites can't take Reddit's traffic. The secret of getting on the front page of Reddit is to make sure your server can handle Reddit's insane traffic. There's a reason most of Reddit's front page is image memes from IMGUR, because most servers crash before they even reach the front page. If you're on the front page, you get from 50,000 to 500,000 visitors and 5,000 to 25,000 simultaneous users. That's gigantic amounts of traffic. To compare, Nomadlist might get 50 simultaneous users at any point of the day. My server crashed when it was on page 2. Then I asked my friend, Os Ike de Jongste, to jump on Skype and help me in the middle of the night. He logged into my server, and together we optimized it to handle the traffic. TLDR. We made all dynamic PHP run pages into static HTML files, and as it was running on NGINX server, it went fine. With 5,000 people on there, it was usable. A small miracle. You can always make your site dynamic again when the traffic goes down, but static is definitely the way to prepare for this. A quick and dirty way to make your dynamic pages static is to make a scheduled server job that does something like this. PHP index.php is index.html. If you're using PHP, this works, but you can probably do it with other languages too. Just make sure the index.html shows up on your site if people load it and not the PHP file. It dramatically reduces load, as now it's not a program operation, but just a file read operation for your server. Now you're saying, what if my app is dynamic? Which it usually is. Well, in case of Nomadlist, the filtering of cities is dynamic, but that's just one AJAX call to a very light API server script. You need way less power to let your server respond to API calls than to generate an entire web page. So you can keep that API running, just make the main page static. You need to remember, most people bounce from your site anyway if you're on Reddit. About 20% will actually use it. That's why reducing the load of the initial page is important. Pick the right subreddit. When submitting to Reddit, you need to pick a subreddit. It's probably best to first submit it a subreddit that is particularly relevant to the product you're launching. In my case, I'm building a food delivery app for pets, so I could go with reddit.com or rpets. Again, the title is very important. Hi, rrpets. I made a site that lets you subscribe to food delivery for your pet. This is a good way to get quick traction and see what people in your specific niche pets think about it. A more general one to get quick feedback about your startup is reddit.com rstartups. How to get on the front page. Now here's what you've all been waiting for. How do you get on the front page? Reddit's front page used to be based on a selection of subreddits that change regularly. But since 2016, all non-adult subreddits are included. Still, this means if your submission goes to the top of a high-traffic subreddit, you have a good chance it will be in the top 100 posts of the entirety of Reddit too. If you reach the top 100 of posts, you'll be somewhere on page 4 of the front page. Here's where the real battle starts. You now have to climb from page 4 to page 1. Again, most sites fail here because they start going down because of the traffic already coming in now being too much. If you don't go down, it's now really about the collective hive mind of Reddit, and if they like it or not. The scale of Reddit is so big if you're in the top 100, that it means you can't really affect it any longer from here. If it's great, it'll slowly get pushed to the front page. This might take a few hours, and more probable, actually, is that it doesn't happen. A very common subreddit that people who make little functional apps arc sites use is reddit.com, RR, internet, is beautiful. In my case, as Nomad List and Hood Maps were a bit more data-based, I submitted both to reddit.com, RR, data is beautiful. In terms of title, pick a title that's more general, because you want to consider that it'll be seen on the front page. I made a site that lets you subscribe to food delivery for your pet. Submit it and see what happens. And as always, jump in the comments and participate. Launching on BetaList. BetaList is the internet's original startup directory. Launched in 2010 by Mark Kohlbrugge to TechCrunch, it has since helped launch thousands of startups, including being the first launch platform for apps like Pinterest. BetaList is the place for early adopters to discover upcoming and recently launched internet startups. BetaList has a strict curation of what they accept, and unless you pay $129, you're put on a waiting list for launch, which takes 2 months. Therefore, you probably have to pay to go live immediately. Unlike the name BetaList suggests, startups don't have to be in beta anymore to featured. They do have to be new, though. Generally, BetaList can get you around 1,000 visitors with a percentage of those signing up. It's a very targeted tech audience, though, and helpful to get the early users in before you launch on bigger platforms. There will be hate. Your baby that you worked weeks or months on is now out in the world, and the world can be a pretty dark place. People will judge your app fiercely. If something doesn't work, well, it's bad. But if two things don't work, they'll just say the entire app sucks. That's how humans work. Think about yourself. You do the same clicking on random links on Reddit. You get angry if it doesn't work. And you dismiss it. So hate is expected, because there will always be something people disagree with. It doesn't mean that's bad news. One thing you shouldn't do is start fighting with strangers on the internet. That's the fastest way to failure. Instead, try to read through the hate and see actual feedback that you can improve your app with. And if the launch is ongoing, improve it right away, if possible. That doesn't mean build entire features while you're launching, but make sure to fix those little bugs for the new people that are coming onto your site. If you have a native app, that's a hard thing to do, though, as you'll need to redeploy to app stores. In that case, tell people personally that you're deploying a fix now, and they'll be able to update the app later. Why be nice to them, you ask? Because people like to hate. But if you then listen to what they say and act on it, they'll come back with love. Oh wait, there's a real person behind this? With feelings? Oh wow. And they'll treat you better. Things not to do. Asking people to share, like, post your product. There's a difference between asking a few friends to give you a head start by upvoting something. A few. But it gets weird when you start asking everyone publicly to upvote, share, and like your stuff. I know people who keep asking me to tweet their stuff, and I can tell you I never did, I never will, and I don't consider them my friends anymore. Because asking for this is fundamentally beyond the point. The idea is that great things rise up by being rewarded for being great. You can't force traction. Well, you can, for a little while. But all those people you force to share your product won't be there next time, because they don't like you anymore. Buying fake upvotes, likes, followers. The same applies to buying fake virality. It won't work. It looks good on paper, but it's not actual humans. And people are less and less impressed with seeing big numbers on somebody's social media account. More important is, again, what your app does. So why doesn't this work? Well, it actually does work. For a while, you can create artificial traction. The problem is that it doesn't stick. You'll have to keep adding more fake virality, and the odds of it being picked up by actual real humans is quite small. Because if your app was good from the start, it wouldn't need any artificial following. It could push itself just by being great. Because if people like something, they'll share it themselves. They'll make it big. Especially if it's something unique and original that does something better than it has been done before. Because we're sick and tired of fake stuff. This goes much deeper than just apps and sites. The whole zeitgeist is now about people looking for authenticity, because everything around us is fake. We like people that are open, honest, and real. Why? We are bombarded by bullshit marketing messages. Why do you think we're all installing ad blockers? We want purity. We want stuff to be authentic and organic. So what's the best way to get those people to follow you? Be real. Be organic. So the answer is be organic. Be real. Create traction by making a great product that is considerably better than the competition, easier to use, and more original. The big advantage by launching organically is that you will see if your app doesn't work. If it doesn't get traction, there's a good chance it's simply not good enough. The idea might suck. The interface might be bad. Maybe the idea isn't original enough. You'd never be able to find that out by faking it. Telling your story. Blog. People might call this content marketing, but I feel this is a sleazy term. It means that you're writing something with the goal of selling something. I don't like that. It should be real. I started blogging years ago, and pretty much the preface of Nomad List was me writing about traveling for 1.5 years. And randomly, because of that, I had a small audience of people that knew me, and that just grew a lot and helped Nomad List launch a lot. Blogging in that way gives you the opportunity to build up an audience even before you launch. I have a hunch, though, that text is becoming less important. LOL writing this in a book. But I think it's true. Look at the rise of Instagram and Snapchat versus Twitter and Facebook. People are getting too lazy to read lots of text. Probably only a few people will actually read this entire book. I wonder how many actually will read this sentence. So there's a case to be made that telling your story should happen in a different, or at least in more media than just text alone. Press. Why press matters. The importance of press is that it gets you lots of mainstream users outside of your niche bubble, especially non-techie people that are hard to reach through platforms like Product Hunt. Why press increasingly matters less. Just like I wrote before about blogging, I think people read press less and less. Again, that's a hunch, but I think I'm right. The rise of Product Hunt is an example of a platform that pretty much took a big bite out of the tech press pie by automating it. And then there's the issues with the deep mistrust people have of press these days. Readers aren't sure if what they're reading is a paid advertorial or actually a real article about a company. Startup founders are scared to talk to journalists in fear of becoming part of clickbait hit pieces killing their careers. You might need press to kickstart traction, but you definitely need it less and less when you have traction already, especially in these times. If you do use the press, make sure you control the conversation. You set the angle of the story. Check what type of articles journalists write before you talk to them. Fact check the articles they post about you or your product after, and ask for corrections if necessary. Press can easily flip a story to become negative about you and your product in favor of page views. The press is not necessarily your friend, as much as they like to make it sound like it when they talk to you. How to get press. Make a press list. The reason most people don't get press is because they simply contact the main email address of a press outlet like tips@thenextweb.com with their app's pitch and URL. Here's a little secret. Those email addresses are the industry's black holes. A lot of stuff goes in them. Not much comes out. The way to get a journalist to write about you is to make it personal. How do you do that? Well, first figure out which journalist would actually be interested in your app and find it useful. Every journalist has their own style, taste, and personality. And niche. There's tech journalists who mostly write about cryptocurrencies, or only about travel apps, or only about bootstrapped companies. Find journalists that are relevant for your app by searching who writes about your competitors or apps in your industry. Just doing that already gets you further than 99% of people who don't take the time. Shooting one targeted email can result in more success than 1,000 non-targeted emails to every single journalist out there. If you know a journalist that already wrote about a previous app you made, that's a warm connection, and it's very valuable. Keep them in the loop about your projects, but don't bug them. They'll be happy to write about you again if they like what you're doing. Update them about significant stuff and give them scoops. That means exclusive news you don't give anybody else. That's currency for journalists. Based on all of this, make a press list of journalists you want to approach. A fair estimate is that less than 5% will write about you, even if you target it well. So to get 5 press features, you need to contact 100 journalists. That might even be a positive estimate. It might take hundreds of targeted emails. How do you find these journalists? Luckily, here's a few directories to find contacts for journalists. One website to find tech journalists in specific is submit.co. Lets you find a major amount of press outlets. From there, you can go on to find specific journalists. Put every journalist in a spreadsheet and personally contact them. Don't bug them. In the list, write down how far you are with them. For example, emailed, then replied, then will feature, and keep track. Don't underestimate this. This takes work, especially if you're new. Nobody knows you, and you don't know anybody either. How to approach journalists. Journalists generally hate if you approach them through Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn. They still use and read email, just not in the way you do. They skim through it very fast. The best way to get them to stick is to keep your approach concise and powerful. I see so many people write lengthy emails about why their app is the best thing ever, but hardly anybody's able to argue why it's great. What's the value for people? And they're all lengthy. Journalists don't have time for that stuff. Here's an example of a bad email that is very typical. Subject: New startup Petsy.com. Hi Tech Crunch. We just launched our new startup Petsy. It's funded with a Series A round led by Lion Capital. We're growing like crazy, crushing it right now, and we'd love to tell you more about our launch this week. Petsy connects pet owners and pet food. It works like this: you go to the app, then you select which food you want, then you tap order. It then delivers the food to your house. We have about 5,000 people in our app and growing 40%. Thanks for covering us. Rick, CEO, founder Petsy.com. This email is intended for the addressee shown. It contains information that is confidential and protected from disclosure. Any review, dissemination, or use of this transmission or its contents by persons or unauthorized employees of the intended organizations is strictly prohibited. The contents of this email do not necessarily represent the views or policies of Rick Andrews. Why is it bad? It's way, way, way too long. Ain't nobody got time for this. It gets to the point way too late. Subject is vague. It's not personally written towards the journalist. It's full of vague bragging instead of facts, e.g., we're growing like crazy. It uses buzzwords like crushing it and jargon like connecting pet owners. It's full of ego and business lingo, like CEO, founder of what? There is no clickable link to your startup. It has a ridiculous disclaimer. If you look at it from a distance, it's just a block of text. This is not good, but this is what journalists get by default. So how should you approach a journalist? Most importantly, be concise. Keep your email to 1 or 2 sentences max. Here's a good pitch to Susan from TechCrunch, who you know is interested in food or pet industry startups. Subject: Food delivery startup for pets. Hi Jody, I made a site that lets you subscribe to food delivery for your pet. Let me know if you need more info. https://petsy.com. It's friendly, fast, and clear. The journalist has the opportunity to check it out themselves without you selling it to them. And yes, if they like it, they'll reply and ask you for more info. That's when you can give all your data and info. Be sure to reply to them ASAP, as they're impatient. They might be waiting to write an article on you, and if you reply immediately, they can get on with it. If you don't, they might scrap it and write about something else. They might reply, "Nice. Do you have funding? Revenue? What's the market size? Any screenshots I can use for the article?" Tell them quickly and concisely again and send them what they need immediately. Make it as easy as possible for them to write about it. Send them screenshots and press material that is already cropped perfectly, so their job is easy. Make a journalist's job easy, and they'll be happy to write about you. And be nice. Even better is to add a personal touch. If you know something personal about journalists that seems relevant to your app, tell them. If they have a puppy called Robert De Niro and talk publicly about it, you could ask, subject: Food delivery startup for your puppy, Robert De Niro. Hi, Jody. I made a site that lets you subscribe to food delivery for your pet. Maybe it'll save you some time feeding Robert De Niro. https://chagpetsy.com. Gaining controversy. There's very few times where I'd say Trump is a good example to follow, but in case of marketing, he might give you some hints. Trump became president through controversy. And without making this book political, it's impossible to deny that didn't work. He became president. The problem is that most people are not controversial. Because we're nice people. We don't like to shock. We're not raised like that. But if you want to get attention, a little bit of controversy will get you much further than the rest. And that's most certainly essential to getting press. The news is literally called news because it writes about things that are new. If you just build an adaptation of the same old thing and tell the story about it in the same way as people did before. Well, they're not going to write about it, so it needs to be fresh. Either your product needs to be radically different or better. Hint, most people think their product is, but it isn't. Or how you tell the story about it needs to be different. Controversy is by definition different than the norm. I use controversy all the time. I wanted to make an app to get people to complete their goals. But when they don't make their goal by their deadline, it charges their credit card. First I thought I should donate it to a charity. But then I thought, fuck it, let's keep it to myself. Then I had to find a name. I wanted to call it Just Do It. But Nike owns that trademark. So I thought, Go Do It. Okay, that's nice, but a bit plain. What about Go Fucking Do It? I asked friends and they all said that I should remove the fucking part. And I agree, in most cases it's not even that it's offensive. It just looks cheap and cheesy. But I did, and I registered gofuckingdoit.com and launched it. It went viral all over the press and struck a right nerve. The two reasons were the name and the fact that I was very brutally honest that I would get the money if you failed your goal. Every single time I presented the idea and said that, the audience started laughing. So there's something there. It's cheeky, naughty, controversial. The way I market this book is a bit controversial. I will diametrically oppose the old way of doing startups, namely raising funding through venture capitalists, attack it, and provide a solution, namely, do it yourself, ship lean. I make my slightly controversial message very simplified. VC is bad, indie is good. People don't have a lot of time, so you need to get your point across. Even though VC is bad, indie is good is simplified. It does align with my core values. Sure enough, not all VCs are bad, and there's plenty of indie businesses that are also bad, but generally I agree with the statement. And it sells because it's simple and controversial. Which press outlets? Tech and mainstream press is merging and has lots of overlap. Here's the biggest outlets right now in both. This list will probably be outdated quickly if this book is getting older, so take it with a grain of salt. A quick way to find which press outlets to target right now is to check where your favorite apps or your competitors have gotten coverage. Also remember to find press outside of tech and mainstream, but in the niche of your product. If you're building a software as a service app for hairdressers, be sure to reach out to the main industry magazine website for hairdressers in America. Tech Press. The main tech chop business news outlets right now are The Next Web, Forbes, Lifehacker, Quartz, Mashable, Fast Company, Entrepreneur, Business Insider, Wired, Inc., Tech.co. Mainstream Press. The most important mainstream news outlets right now are HuffPost, The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, The Guardian, Washington Post, CNBC, CNN, The Telegraph, Observer, Vice, Mirror, Slate. Don't stick to one launch, keep launching. Make every feature a launch opportunity. A more recent strategy by many startups is to make every feature launch a special promotional opportunity. By adding new features and broadcasting them to press, you can keep getting attention. Even if you've already launched ages ago, people like seeing improvements. And they'll write articles about it, resulting in traffic coming back to your site. Side project marketing. Building up from that, many startups are now simply launching lots of mini apps with distinct functionality that before might have been a feature of their existing app. But by decoupling it from their main app, they can use it as an entire new launch. And that gives them the full benefit of a new product launch. This is also called side project marketing. On my self-confident days, I think I had something to do with it when I tried to launch 12 startups in 12 months. It got people the idea that you don't need to ship perfect apps. You just need to ship a lot, and you'll get way more press than anyone else. A famous example of this is Buffer. They launched Pablo, an online image editor to put text on photos for sharing on social media. More recently, they launched Respond, a messaging solution for doing customer support on social media. You see the red line here. Their industry is social media, and they make lots of little apps now for it. They could have launched these as features of Buffer, but they specifically chose not to. This way, they leverage getting press for each new product, and if they want, they can either spin off the product from their company entirely or integrate it into their core product, like Buffer's main app. Another famous example is Crew. They launched their side project Unsplash, a free stock photo site, which became even bigger than their main business. Then they did it again by launching howmuchtomakeanapp.com, a calculator to see how much it costs to build an app. They got a crazy amount of press just by doing these two mini apps. How to stay motivated working on one product. Keeping up the long-term motivation for a product is hard. And I think some people have difficulty keeping up motivation for an idea because they're not getting feedback from the market. You shouldn't work on an idea that isn't taking off. You can't just, for months and years upon years, work on something that doesn't give any feedback. It is important that you at least get people excited about your app or your idea and people using it. If nobody's using it, then you're going to lose motivation. For me, the motivation is intrinsic if people use it or if I make money with it. Then I know it works and I want to keep working on it. If it doesn't motivate you, sell it or kill it. If your idea is actually successful and it becomes a real product, it becomes a company that actually makes money, then it's very normal to become bored with it. Maybe your long-term vision is not there anymore. You don't think it's going to get any bigger. In that case, sell it. Sell it to somebody or hire people to run it for you or automate most of it so you don't have to focus on it anymore. Then you can focus on an idea that does motivate you because it's really important, I think. For me, work has to be motivating for me. If I don't believe in what I'm making anymore, then I don't want to really do it anymore. That's when I lose the motivation. It's very important to have motivation for your idea. Make sure you just kill your product if it doesn't motivate you and if it doesn't get feedback from people. How many ideas should I work on at a time? I think my strategy is that I work on a lot of stuff at the same time because I want to not have all my eggs in one basket. I think there's a higher chance of success if you try different stuff. Right now, I have two main projects. I have a third side project I work on. Then there's two others that are kind of small that might go somewhere in the next few months or few years. The most important ones obviously get most of the focus. They get like 80% of the focus. I also get pretty bored quickly, so switching projects works for me. It depends on yourself, though. How much time do you have to work on ideas? If you do have all the time in the world, then just work on different stuff. If you can't work on a few different ideas because you think it takes too much time, you're probably spending too much time per idea, too much time on executing something, you should make things more minimal. Conclusion: the launch is probably one of the most important parts of doing a startup. Everyone underestimates its importance and difficulty. It can make an average product or break a great product. You should launch early, so you get feedback from users quickly. Launch on the typical tech sites, like Product Hunt, Hacker News, then go for the mainstream on Reddit, and go for your product's niche on specific niche platforms. Don't spam your launch, but do let people know you've launched, like your followers and press outlets. Most importantly, a launch is not finite. If you'll have a product running, you'll keep launching repeatedly every few months or years when you have specific big new feature developments. Nowadays, the launch is perpetual. Resources mentioned: MailChimp, Google Analytics, Mixpanel, Amplitude, Hotjar, Product Hunt, Hacker News, Reddit. Your homework: make a list of places you will launch your first product. These can be the typical ones like Product Hunt, Hacker News, and Reddit, but make sure there's more niche platforms on there too. Write a title and description for each platform you will launch to. Personalize it for each platform depending on its audience. Make sure it doesn't look spammy. Do a final check that your product actually works. Can a new user immediately see what it is about and start using it? Go through the process multiple times to make sure every little bug is gone. Pick a day and time and launch. grow. Introduction. So you've launched your product. You've been on all the big sites. You got major press to write about you. But it's now been 2 weeks since launch day, and you're naturally seeing traffic and usage drop off. What's going on? Well, it's one thing to launch a product successfully. It's a whole different challenge to keep that momentum going and make your product grow in the future. It's somewhat of a mystical art. Everybody wants to succeed at it, and only some do. And those some are only able to do it sometimes. If anybody knew exactly how to do it repeatedly, they'd be very rich. I've only been able to do it a few times, so I'll tell you what I feel are important things to try, at least. First, to get a few things out of the door, don't hire growth hackers. 99.99% of them are useless and are trying to sell a mystical art. They often didn't even succeed at themselves as something you can just buy as a service. It doesn't work that way. If anything, growth should have been in your product from the start. The product has to be intrinsically viral nowadays. It needs to be something people really want or need, like people staying up late using your app, site, product, people mentioning it to their friends for days. People need to be excited for it. You can't just get a growth hacker to buy that. Additionally, growth hackers usually have dark black hat spammy techniques that might get you short-term results, but long-term you'll be punished by karma, or Google, or insert other megacorp or law enforcement. Why is organic growth better? So what should you do? Growth to me should be mostly natural and organic, especially in the early stages, e.g. after launch of your product. There's a few arguments I can make for this. First off, it's free. You don't need to pay for ads or traffic. Secondly, it gives you direct feedback if your product is good enough or not. If you'd be using non-organic ways of growth like ads, you'll see your product's usage grow, and you might think things are going well. But when you stop paying for those ads, those users are probably gone fast. This is actually a gigantic problem with funded startups. They can keep their big numbers up while they pay, sometimes 100% plus of their revenue in ads. But once the funding runs out, it all falls apart. So what happens if you don't do that and you go for organic growth? You'll quickly see your product not take off, and you'll have to tweak stuff until it does take off. Before you say it, I'll say it. Yes, you can combine the two. Obviously, you can segment paid traffic and organic traffic and see who is doing what. That's probably smart. But personally, I'm always for organic first. See if you can get your usage up yourself. It's cheaper, and it gives better direct feedback if you're doing the right thing. When you've got nice traction, depending on your app, obviously, but I like 100,000 plus MAU as a threshold, you might be able to start scaling it up with paid traffic like ads. Why then? Because you've already proven your product works for people. Now you just need to get more of those people in to figure out that they want and need it. I see a lot of people do the opposite. They start with paid traffic first, then end it once money runs out, and then they see the product fails. Because all the users they ever had were artificial. Don't be that person. Especially fake users. It's pretty crazy I even have to mention this, but I see this too often. People buying fake users, engagement, followers, likes, etc. This is the fastest way to failure. If you didn't get the memo, people don't really care about followers, likes anymore. Actually, only having a few might give you the feel of being an underdog, and they'll love to support your brand. Running bots on social networks that favorite posts with certain keywords, try tweeting "Chakra growth hacking for fun," is blatant, and people will actually get annoyed by you and your company, and you'll be worse off. I tried it on Instagram to get a head start for Nomadlist, because I was late to get to the platform, and really it doesn't result in any organic traction. It's better to come up with a strategy to build your brand on there for that specific platform than to just buy yourself into it. Again, it won't result in organic traction. Trust me, if people like your product, they'll use it, and you'll get people engaging with you. There's no shortcuts, though. This can take time. Years. How to get organic growth? Growth can be divided into 2x1, either reaching people who don't know your product, new users, or 2, people coming back and using your product more, returning users. Reaching new people takes effort and means you literally have to reach out of your current environment to find them. Re-engaging previous users is a lot easier, though. We'll now discuss both. Get new users. Keep launching. The best way to get your first users is to launch the first version of your product fast. But a first launch will just be a single spike of new users for a week or so, and then it drops off. Nobody ever said you can't keep launching, though. If you add a whole bunch of new features, you should tell the world about it. And the best way is to just launch it as a new version of your product. You can't do this every week or every month, really. But every few months, why not? Sure. It shows your product is evolving and getting better. A good way is to put a version number on your site. You want to launch product 2.0, and then 3.0, etc. Spinning off. So many times when making a new feature, I found out that feature was strong enough to be a product of its own. For example, I started adding co-working spaces to Nomad List. The thing is, there's lots of non-travelers that a giant index of co-working spaces would be useful to. So I spun it off as a separate app called Places to Work, placestowork.co. It runs well on mobile and lets people walk around while it uses the GPS API to see where they are and direct them to the closest places to work. Spinning off stuff works well because it also gives you an entirely new launch to get traffic from. The product you spin off should be strong enough, though, to allow it to be its own product. Tell stories to people in press. While you keep improving your product, it's also important to keep getting into press, even after you already launched the first time. A way to do that is by telling stories. Instead of just adding a feature to your product and ending there, every new feature can be a story. How is what you just added changing the vision or path of your product? With Nomad List, I started with a list of cities. Then I added co-working spaces, hotels, and finally you could see where other travelers were at any moment. You can see that as just adding features, but you can also make it a narrative where you're slowly moving down the chain of scale to capture every little part of a traveler's experience. That narrative is interesting for press to write about. Just adding a feature isn't. Stories can be more personal than just features, though. Tell about your own journey and maybe struggles before or during the build-up to your product. Before I had anything really successful, I had a YouTube channel for electronic music that made some money. That money made it possible for me to travel and work somewhere else than home. That experience helped me make a site for those travelers. And that process of building a bootstrap startup gave me the information I'm sharing with you now in this book. That's another narrative, and it's much more original to tell that than to just say, I built another internet company. You did, but there was stuff before and after that. That's more interesting to people you meet who spread your story, and especially to press. Your story is unique in some ways, so figure out why it is. And tell that. Build in public. One way of storytelling is building in public. The last few years, one of the most effective strategies to get promotion has been to build in public. It means to publicly blog, vlog, or in any way communicate the entire story of building your product or startup from the start. You're completely transparent about how things are going, even if things don't go so well. It's about sharing the stuff you learn from trying to build a product. One of the greatest examples of this strategy is Buffer. From the start, they've shared every little step in the way to getting where they're now on their blog Buffer Open. Another good example is Dan from RocksCodes, who live streams the building of his products like Thumbnail Test. He doesn't just stream his screen, he streams himself sleeping, waking up, and making coffee. It works because it builds attention around him and his product. Why does being transparent work? Because people like to be part of success or failure stories. And with every little step, there's an opportunity to get attention and press by sharing it with the public. People become engaged with your product by reading about it, and a share of those people may become actual users of your product. In that respect, transparency is very meta in its nature. By sharing about the product, it usually makes the product itself do better. You have an advantage right now, as of writing, because most companies are not transparent at all. It's a relatively new trend. They're not open about their progress. So for now, it'll bring you attention. There's a clause, though. If the people who are interested in your progress are also potential users of your product, then do it. It doesn't make sense otherwise because they'll never convert into users. This goes further than startups. Right now, we live in the age of transparency. If you show your vulnerabilities and mistakes, it doesn't make you look weak. It makes you look like a human. And that works because your audience is humans, okay, and cats, and they'll recognize themselves in you or your company. A good example of transparency is an app called Arc Backup. It automatically backs up your data to the cloud. In 2017, they discovered that one of their versions actually deleted your backups. This is the most terrible thing that could happen to backup software, which has the goal of saving your backups. The maker of the app wrote a personal post describing what happened and apologizing. People were angry, but their anger was less seeing how the maker handled it. Don't hide. Show your mistakes. Fix them. Behind every company is imperfect human. Your users know and appreciate this. More on this in telling your story. Make people share easily. This is a very common thing so many people get consistently wrong or forget, but it's so major. You can undoubtedly argue about how important social networks are these days, and I'm not a giant fan of Facebook either, but they still account for large parts, up to 30%, of all traffic sources on the web. Facebook uses a set of tags in your HTML called Open Graph, and they start with OG. Make sure you fill them out for every page on your site, and if you can just program them so they dynamically get generated. The most important tag is OG Media, and it lets you set a picture for each page on your site. It's very important to use this. A shared link with a picture on it gets so much more clicks than one without. Twitter uses something similar called Twitter Cards. It also involves tags, and when it works, it'll show a big picture on the Twitter timeline when people share your URL, just like Facebook does. Even if you're making a native iOS or Android app, it makes sense to let people share stuff and add some little tiny web part of to it to do just that. A good example of a big company doing that was Instagram, who never had a big web presence. They just had a page with the shared picture and a button install Instagram back then. That was good enough to reach the user's goal of sharing the picture and the company's goal of growing the app's installs. Here's where it gets even better. If you have some programming chops, you can make the image for each of your site dynamic. Product Hunt uses a service called URL2PNG that dynamically makes screenshots of each page on their site so that if you share it, you see a preview of the page. That's cool. But you can do better. Make a page in HTML that displays the most important information about the page you want to share and is very visual. For example, if you have an app for marathon runners and you want them to share specific running routes, why not make a page that shows the entire route on a map with thick fat lines and maybe some data like 25 kilometers, 50 marmir written in the top right? Now you think, what do I do with yet another page? Well, this isn't a page. You're going to screenshot this page and use that as the image for the original page users would want to share. That screenshotting can be automated with URL2PNG. Or if you want to do it yourself with a headless Chrome script that screenshots URLs, it's a bit too extensive and technical and subject to change to go into this deeply. But Google everything I said and you'll figure out the technicalities of it. The goal is to make dynamically generated shareable images for every page on your site. You'll see lots more people come in from social media after you do this. A great example is Gyroscope's app on iOS. It lets you import lots of data from your fitness trackers and iPhone's HealthKit sensors. Then it shows you visualizations of that data in a really pretty format. For example, I can see a beautiful map of my city with a path traced of where I walked that in the last few weeks. It's shareable to my friends and gets more people using Gyroscope. Human-readable URLs and slugs. Let's talk about URLs. Do you have an interactive element to your site? For example, if you have a product comparison site, do you have lots of filters people can select? Make sure that after people select new filters, you add data to the URL of your page so that they can share the exact state of your page when they shared it. Instead of http compare.com razor blades, make it into http compare.com razor blades, size large and blades, for and color blue. Or even better, http compare.com razor blades large, four blade razors in blue. Make sure every interactive state of your app or product is shared in the URL, or it'll confuse people. More cool stuff you can do is letting people share specific stuff. For example, on your product comparison site, you can suggest sentences to share like, the Gillette 4-blade razor is 6x more powerful than the Dollar Shave Club 2-blade. Something like that. Program your site to make dynamic sentences that explain the current state of your app, the user is in, but in human language. On Nomad List, if people select the filters surfing, fast internet, near a beach, and safe for women, my JavaScript code generates this URL, https://nomadlist.com, cities with fast internet safe for women to travel alone near a beach. When the page is opened, it will look like this. It's not easy to code this, and it took me a while, but it's important to make the URLs easy to understand and share for the user. Launch an API. A good strategy to grow is to launch an API. This means you make your data, and sometimes features, on your site accessible to other startups. Well-known APIs are Facebook's API that lets people log in with Facebook without creating user accounts, or Twitter's API that lets you tweet with a user's account from within your app. Making an API means other startups can integrate your app's features and data into their app. In case of Nomad List, that might mean Booking.com shows a Nomad score next to destinations on their website. This is good because it might mean more brand awareness and traffic for Nomad List, and for Booking.com, it helps their user experience. There's big risks involved with sharing data through an API, though. In case of Nomad List, I launched my API that shared all public data from my site. Within 90 days, there were 6 identically looking clones of Nomad List in English, Russian, and Chinese. A few of them launched on Product Hunt and Hacker News with success, and there was no mention of Nomad List at all. It helped them, it didn't help me. People launched apps to the App Store using my data, without any links back. Obviously, this wasn't the goal, and it was now negatively affecting my company. So I disabled the API after that. That's why you should probably think about your goal with making an API and how much data and features you want to make accessible. You can also require companies to register to use your API and give them an API key, and cut them off if they abuse it. If an API works well for you, it means increased brand awareness on other sites, so it can act as a funnel to get you more users, and it helps the company using your API with extra data or features. That's great for both parties. Build with your users. Another big part of growth and people coming back is how to get ideas for more features your users want to have. As mentioned before, on every website or app, I have a small feedback box. You can set this up with a lot of services like OLARC or Intercom. What they do is they add a small chat box on the bottom left or bottom right of your web page. People can simply enter like, hey, there's a bug here, or I want this feature. This goes straight to your email. The cool thing is that actually people send pretty cool stuff. They send lengthy emails, messages, reports on features they would love to use. People love doing that because they love co-creating a startup with you. The people that give you those ideas are usually the best users because they're experts at your product. Choosing what to build next, based on what they're saying, is amazing because many times, after you've already solved your own problem, you think that this is it. A lot of people use the app, have extra information for you. I'm not saying you should build for other people. You should build for yourself, but they can give you different perspectives on your own problem space a little bit. That's super useful to think of making new features. Measure how you stand up against your competitors. Now that you have a running product, you want to know how it's performing relatively against your potential competitors. A great app for this is called SimilarWeb. The data isn't that accurate for smaller sites, e.g. 10,000 visits per month, but gets accurate around 100,000 visits per month. Even if the data is a bit different than your Google Analytics stats, relatively to other competitors, you can see if you're doing better or worse over time. That's pretty valuable to make decisions on. Remember, traffic is a very limiting metric, though. Your competitor might get more users and visits, but still make less revenue than you. Sometimes you can deduct how much money they make from their traffic, though. Sites that get 1,000 visits a month often make $1 to $10 million per year if monetized well. Sites that get 100,000 visits a month often make $100K to $1 million per year similarly. It's a very, very rough rule, but 1,000 visits usually means $110 if they monetize properly. Conclusion. So what's the best hack ever to get people to come back and grow a product? Make a really useful and great product. That's way more efficient than trying to get users to share stuff on social networks, emailing them or sending them push notifications to come back to your site, or trying to get into press all the time. If people really love your product, they'll come back to it. It'll be planted in their mind. They need it. So whatever you do, focus on making the product great first. Then think about growth later.
And that
doesn't mean you shouldn't optimize for growth with the techniques described here. But if the product sucks, you can try to hack growth as much as you want, but it won't turn into sustainable growth and just die down again. Growth is a multiplier for an already great product. Resources mentioned. Buffer Open. Google Analytics. Drew Wilson. Social media share images. Your homework. Analyze your analytics from your current launch. What have you learned? Did many people who visited your site or installed your app kept using it? How was the fall of users after a few days? Analyze the user feedback you got from users directly through a feedback box, but also in the comments sections of the platforms you launched it on. If you had press coverage, what did they think about it? Use this feedback to immediately improve your product.